everybody. Lovely to be with you again. Doing that first reading from Proverbs, it was a verse there that struck me, verse 18, 19. The rod of the wicked is as dark as night. And then three verses to that, it said, the rod of the righteous trouble is like the sunrise getting brighter and brighter until daylight has come. So we get that lovely idea of the contrast between darkness and light, don't we? In those passages, I'm sure you've got the Bible. Everything's gone right. Slow for the desk. Sorry, this morning. That means I'm going to have to find passages later, but there's nothing. Now, what I wanted to do this morning, briefly, was to just spend a few minutes thinking about one aspect of the Luke Gospel, actually, which links into that particular verse. I don't know whether, if you think back over what Graham's just read, there's a passage in there which talks about darkness. I want to start the story, actually, before we go back to Luke 18. Wendy and I, over many years, have had the great privilege of actually going to the Christadelphian Blind and Handicapped School in Bengui in the Cameroon. And I'm sure some of you have supported that great charity for quite some while. A meal a day, actually, run that activity now. Before the troubles out in the Cameroon and surrounded Bengui, which led towards the school being shut down, and COVID, of course, as well. There were about 60 children there at the school, and the majority of them were physically, severely handicapped. But there was always a small group of blind children. The interesting thing, of course, is that they needed staff to look after those children, and a number of the staff were also blind, had been blind all their lives, probably about four or five of them. And while we were spending time there, you could imagine we had lots of experiences with them. And we've got very happy memories of the time that we spent at the school. The thing about these blind staff, as far as I was concerned, and I'm sure many would say the same, was the fact that we were amazed to see their determination to carry on what we would call a normal life. Their achievements were tremendous, really. Their ability to actually learn Braille themselves and then to pass it on and teach the children. They were able to help the children to cultivate crops, which they were doing themselves around the school. They helped children to make wicker furniture and all sorts of other activities that were going on. And of course, at the centre of all this was their ability to teach the children about the love of God and the love of Jesus and the Lord's ways, which we've been reading about that wisdom which we read about in that proverb that we had this morning. And they were helping the children to lead meaningful, purposeful, varied and interesting lives as well. One of my first memories of being there at the school was seeing one of these young blind called Ben teaching an elderly lady, or another old lady, how to use a stick to find her way around the school. And I wondered why in amongst the children was this lady there. Well, the interesting thing about it was the fact that this lady's name was Cecilia, and she had lived in an area away from the school, and she had been struck with river blindness midlife. She'd been a teacher. She'd got three or four children of her own, so she had family life. to care for. And when the blindness struck her, which it did, if you know anything about river blindness, it can come on slowly, but it can come on quickly to some people, and it did come on to her quite quickly. And when she was thrust into the darkness, she was actually terrified. And I don't know whether you could ever imagine what that would be like if it happened to you. I mean, some people do lose their sight, but I don't. Others do actually lose their sight quickly. But to move from a situation where she knew where she was, what she was doing, she could see everything, to in the darkness, the blackness, was traumatic for her. And knowledge of her came to the management of the school, and they invited her to come to the school and see if they could help her. And over time, on our visits, we got to know Cecilia very well. And she used to come along to our Sunday services and to our daily talks about the scriptures and what God had done and what Jesus was doing, as we've just read. And slowly, slowly, she began to understand what we believed. And then one day she came to me and she said, "Brother Mike, can you tell me what I have to do to become associated with the Lord Jesus?" Which you can imagine was a really moving experience after the amount of time we'd spent there. That memory came back to me when I thought about the invitation this morning, because we've just read, haven't we, in that Luke chapter 18, the account of the blind man coming to Jesus. We find, not from Luke, but from Matthew's record, that his name was Bartimaeus. We don't know much about him at all. It's thought, perhaps, that because his name starts with Bar, which is the equivalent of the Hebrew of Ben, that he might have been a Greek. We don't really know. But he might not have been a Jew. Anyway, that part. And the more I thought about him coming to Jesus, made me realise of it. My experience with Cecilia out in the Cameroon at Bengal, and realising the change that it had made to her life, I could begin to feel what it must have meant to Bartimaeus to come to Jesus and move from darkness to light, which is what happened to him, wasn't it? And I just wanted to pick up a few thoughts about that where they could take. Luke, having become himself a follower of Jesus, a believer, he decided, didn't he? He tells us that he was going to investigate all that had happened, all the facts about the life of Jesus, and he decided, for whatever reason, to include this event in his gospel record. We know, as we read through what he wrote, that wherever Jesus went, large crowds followed him. And they had their motivation for doing that. Some obviously wanted to be fed, some wanted just to be inquisitive and find out what was going on. But others came with personal needs, didn't they? And that's the situation, obviously, here in this record in Luke, starting at verse 35 to the end of the chapter. Jesus, it tells us, was heading for Jerusalem. And he was passing by Jericho, it tells us at the start. And there was Bartimaeus sitting at the side of the road, not uncommon, begging, trying to make something of his life, wasn't he? And he heard the commotion, tells us, and he was told that it was Jesus who was passing by. And I'm sure if you can let your mind work, if you can get that figure sitting on the side of the road, there's all this big crowd, and Jesus probably leading the way, and he's wondering, what's going on? And eventually he gets the message. It is Jesus who is passing by. And that's all it says, isn't it? When he heard the crowd, he says, what is this? What's going on? Well, think about it for a moment. Jesus and the disciples, over time, before this, had healed many blind people, I'm sure. They'd done many miracles all over the place, hadn't they, as they were traveling around. And a thought struck me, if you go back to Mark's Gospel, Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 9, there's an account there of a previous occasion where, in verse 27, Jesus heals two blind men. And I think this might be significant, because verse 27 of Matthew 9 says, Jesus left that place, and as he walked along, two blind men started following him. So this is a very different situation. And when Jesus, and they said, take pity on us, son of David. Notice that. What they said, take notice of us, take pity upon us, son of David. They shouted. And when Jesus had gone indoors, the two blind men came to him, and he asked them, do you believe that I can heal you? Yes, sir, they said. And then Jesus touched their eyes and said, let it happen then, just as you believe. And their sight was restored. And Jesus spoke to them sternly to them and said, don't tell this to anyone. Now, whatever happened, every time, or most times, when Jesus says that to anybody, what do they do? It's the opposite. But they left and spread the news abroad about Jesus all over that part of the country. And I'm sure that it's just one little event which Bartimaeus might have heard about, might he? Easily. Or certainly any other similar event that had gone on. So from what Bartimaeus, you see, had come, hadn't he, to an understanding of who Jesus was before he sought his help. We're not told the details, but he must have understood about Jesus. And it goes further, doesn't it? Because he believed in the promise of the Son of David. Just like these two that we just read about in Matthew, he uses exactly the same expression about Jesus, the Son of David. And when you link that back in Scripture, the reference comes from Isaiah chapter 9 about the Messiah. So maybe they had more understanding than we would naturally give them credit for. Isaiah 9 verse 7 says, of the increase of his government and of the peace, of there will be no end, and on the throne of David and over his kingdom to establish it and righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. So the promise of the Messiah is linked to the Son of David. And I think these blind people had the perception to understand it. He may well have also understood the promise in Isaiah 29, which says that when the Messiah comes, in that day the deaf shall hear the words of a book, and out of their gloom and darkness the eyes of the blind shall see. So he may very well have had that in his thoughts as well, linking these two things together. Well, what did the crowd do? The crowd tried to silence him, didn't they? Shut him up. Chances. But they couldn't. He wouldn't be shut up. He was absolutely determined to get the attention of Jesus. And no to miss this opportunity that he'd got. With the understanding that he'd got and the opportunity to be there with Jesus, he wasn't going to miss this for anything. And the response of the crowd was anything but kind to him, was it? To them, Bartimaeus was just a nuisance to be silenced, and that was it as far as they were concerned, and that's what his chest tried to do. But he was having none of that. But what about Jesus? Total contrast, isn't it, with Jesus' reaction to the situation. Jesus seems to be really impressed by Bartimaeus' determination. And he responds, as Luke says, in my version, it says, with pity. Other versions say, like in Matthew, to the other two, with compassion. So Jesus' response was totally different to the crowd. The word compassion, if you probably look at the Greek bill, that it talks about being moved from the bowels. It's a feeling that comes from deep within and empathy towards the problem of the individual. And so Jesus was able to enter into Bartimaeus' distress. And that brought back memories to see Cecilia back in the Cameroon there. Earnest stress and what her life was going to be like from there on as far as she was concerned, and she just wanted that change. How much we would have loved to have been able to form a miracle for her. But we couldn't. God only knows, doesn't he? And God was moving the right way at the right time for her. So Jesus was really moved by his situation, wasn't it? And it wasn't just because of Bartimaeus' determination, was it, to get to Jesus, to ask for his help. Jesus tells us in verse 42, he says, okay, you can see. And performs a miracle. And he says, your faith has made you well. So, Jesus understood, as John tells us in his gospel, isn't he? Jesus knew what was in that. He knew the thoughts of Bartimaeus. He knew the heart of Bartimaeus. He knew exactly where Bartimaeus stood and the need of Bartimaeus and his sincerity. He was moved by his condition and his conviction, his trust, his faith, that he could and would help him. So it's obvious, isn't it, that Bartimaeus had come to know the love of God, the fact that God's love was extended to all who put their trust in him. And that led me to think about God and his response to people in need. And we know Luke in his gospel picks up all the down and out sort of situations and the people with difficulties, and this is not one of them. In Old Testament times, God made it very clear to his people, didn't he, when we read through the Old Testament, that they were to treat the foreigners and the needy kindly. In Exodus 23, he says, do not ill-treat a foreigner, or how it feels to be a foreigner, because you were foreigners in Egypt. So God had always made the point to his people that their experience should lead them to act in a certain way. God made it very clear that such people had to be supported and treated in love. He said, you shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, but you fear your God. I am the Lord. Deuteronomy 27 says, cursed be anyone who misleads a blind man on the road. Well, this is exactly what these people were doing, wasn't it? They weren't treating him kindly at all. Just the opposite. And of course in Exodus 34, God tells his people what he is like. He says, I am merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. So what God was like was what he intended everybody else to become like. It struck me that when I was reading the Psalms as we've been going through the other day, Psalm 103 struck me. Just read a few verses from there. This is King David. His appreciation of the way that God looks upon his own character and wants us to look on his character. He says in Psalm 103 verse 6, the Lord judges in favour of the oppressed and gives them their rights. He revealed his plan to Moses and let the people of Israel see his mighty deeds. The Lord is merciful and loving, slow to become angry and full of constant love. So David had a real appreciation, didn't he, of the character of God. And when we move on to Psalm 145, with another psalm of David, just read a few verses from 1 to 9. I will proclaim your greatness, says David, my God and King. I will thank you forever and ever. Every day I will thank you. I will praise you forever and ever. The Lord is great and is to be highly praised. His greatness is beyond understanding. What you have done will be praised from one generation to the next. They will proclaim your mighty acts. They will speak of your glory and majesty. And I will meditate on your wonderful deeds. People will speak of your mighty deeds. And I will proclaim your greatness. They will tell about all your goodness and sing about your kindness. The Lord is loving and merciful, slow to become angry and full of constant love. He is good to everyone and his compassion on all he made. And it's wonderful, isn't it, being able to praise and exalt God for what he is like. And of course, when we come to look at Jesus, that we've come to remember again today, John, in his record, is at great pains to tell us that Jesus only did and only said what he had seen and heard of his Father. Nothing else. Exactly what he'd seen and what he'd heard. And so many of the New Testament examples of the life of Jesus reflect just that fact, don't they? Jesus could say in John 10, after the story of the Good Shepherd, if you remember, he says, I and Father are one. And they were, weren't they? They were one in the sense of being united in purpose and spirit. He had been given a commission by his Father, which was, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, the recovery of the sight to the blind, and to set at liberty those that are bruised. That's what Jesus came to do. And of course, when he talks about recovering the sight to the blind, not just talking about the physical blind, is he? He's talking about the spiritually blind that we read of in Proverbs. So, in that little incident, there's a lovely capture, isn't there, of how Jesus is reflecting what God intended all his children to be like. So what can we learn from this little incident? As we come to celebrate the life and death and resurrection, resurrection of Jesus, the words of the Apostle Peter came to my mind, I must admit, 1 Peter 2, and verses 9 and 10. He says to us, "You have become the chosen race, the king's priests, the holy nation, God's own people, chosen to proclaim the wonderful acts of God who called you out of darkness into his own marvellous light." That's what's happened to us, isn't it? We were in darkness and we've been called into this marvellous light. And it goes on, at one time you were not God's people, but now you are his people. At one time you did not know God's mercy, but now you have received his mercy. So we, in a sense, have been like Bartimaeus, haven't we? We were in our blindness, and he was given his physical sight, and we have been given our spiritual sight. That's what the message is, isn't it, for us? Now, when we think about what we've just read there by Peter, as we look through the New Testament letters, this theme of coming from spiritual darkness to spiritual light is everywhere, isn't it? The Apostle Paul, of course, was a classic, wasn't he? And you will remember as well as I do that after he met the Lord Jesus on the road to Damascus, he was made physically blind by Jesus. Now, why was that? Reverse situation, wasn't it, for him? Because his understanding was wrong, wasn't it? And it had to be put right. And I'm sure that the 3 days that he had there in the darkness, reflecting on his past life and his past understanding, his past relationship with God and with Jesus, who he had been persecuted, Jesus said, must have gone on through his mind until eventually, through the mind of God working in him, he came to an understanding of what Jesus, who Jesus was, and what he'd done. And it must have been an amazing experience for him at that time, wasn't it? And I think that's why when we read what he, Paul, the Apostle Paul, writes in the New Testament in his various letters, rarely do you find him not mentioning being changed from darkness into light. And I just thought, well, let's just pick up one passage, Ephesians chapter 5, for instance, just an example, and verse 8. He says, It's my Bible's got a heading, living in the light. Because that's what he's trying to explain to the Ephesian brothers and sisters, what it is like to live in the light. He says, you, I'm jumping in the middle of his conversation. He said, verse 8, you yourselves used to be in the darkness. We were all there at one point, weren't we? But since you have become the Lord's people, you are in the light. So you must live like people who belong to the light. For it is the light that brings a rich harvest of every kind of goodness, righteousness, and truth. So if we're not in the light, we won't be able to do that. So then he goes on, verse 10, try to learn what pleases the Lord. And then there's a list of things that we must avoid, he says. Just go back to verse 1. Since you are God's dear children, you must, what? Try to be like him. So, just as Jesus listened to what God said, watched what God did, and then put it to practice. Galatians chapter 5. On another occasion, Paul says, you know the verse well, he's talking to the Jews to try and get them to understand that he'd been on, moving from the darkness to light. And he says, the only thing that counts is faith, like Bartimaeus had, expressing itself in love. It's the only thing that counts, he says. You can forget everything else. Not quite, but you know what he said, isn't it? You actually reflect the life of Christ, which was reflected the life of God. And it means showing your faith through love. Blind Bartimaeus, what did he do? To get to Jesus, he threw away his coat, didn't he? Tells us. Cast off his garments. And there's a simple lesson which we've heard many times before, I suppose, we have to make a decision, a deliberate decision, to be with Jesus. And if there's anything that's going to stop us from doing that, we have to take it off, get rid of it, don't we? And that's why in Hebrews the apostle says we have to lay aside our sin that besets us, come to Jesus in the order of completion of our faith. So, you know, for Bartimaeus to do that as a blind man demonstrated what he believed. He believed he would be able to come back to him and pick up that coat. Sure he did. And he did. Well, let's presume he did. So, Bartimaeus' response to his healing shows exactly where his heart was, doesn't it? Just go back to Luke 18 again and just read what he did. Luke 18 and the last verse, I think it is, verse 43, it says, at once he was able to see, and he followed Jesus, giving thanks to God. That's it. He followed Jesus and gave thanks to God. And what happened as a result of that? When the crowd saw it, they all praised God. So there's always this knock-on effect, isn't there? If we truly are now walking in the light, because, as we said before, all these benefits spring out of being in the light. And the importance of that response of Bartimaeus is seen, I suppose, in the previous chapter in Luke. He records the account of the lepers, doesn't he? And we know the story. We're not going to go through it in detail, but you know there was the one leper that wanted even different to all the others. He came back, didn't he, and he said, thank you. And he did what Bartimaeus did, and his life must have been changed dramatically as a result of that. And it was so significant to Jesus that Jesus picks it up and says to us, now look at what that man did, which the others didn't do. So consequently, we have to think about our lives, don't we? And what are we doing in our lives to show our gratitude, our thankfulness, and our praise for what God has done for us and what Jesus has done for us? Just as the life of Jesus mirrored Father's, so our lives should mirror that of Jesus, who sets the example for us. And in that 18th chapter, just before this account of the blind beggar, what had Jesus done? Well, Luke decides to slot it in here for some reason, and it seems to be out of the blue. But it's good for us to remember why, because we're here to break bread and drink wine in memory of Jesus, to what Jesus has done to make our eyes open. Verse 31, we read it earlier. Jesus took the 12 aside and said to them, listen, we're going to Jerusalem. So they were on their way from Jerusalem, from the south, past Jericho, going up north to Jerusalem. We are going to Jerusalem, where everything the prophets wrote about the Son of Man will come true. He will be handed over to the Gentiles, who will mock him, insult him, spit on him, they will whip him, and they will kill him. So that's what we've come to remember again, in one sense. But 3 days later, he will rise to life again. And of course, that's essentially what we've come to remember, isn't it? Because it's in the resurrection of Jesus where our hope springs from, isn't it? The disciples didn't understand these things. But thank the Lord, because we have all this information at our disposal. We do understand what Jesus has done for us. And we've come to remember now, as we take the emblems, his love for us. John in chapter 8 says, Jesus said to them, words that we know so well, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And then in his epistle later, he adds, if we walk in the light, as Jesus is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus cleanses us from all sin. Isn't that amazing? We have no need to fear the future, have we? We are, by the grace of God, in his light, in the light of the Lord. So let's do what Bartimaeus did, and all the others who received the blessing of Jesus in his room. Let us rejoice.